Testing.
This is D.W. Calvert speaking. This is November the 14th, 1980. I'm in the Velvet Cloak Inn in Raleigh, North Carolina, visiting with a former colleague and a longtime associate who has been involved with the School of Agriculture at North Carolina State University, and especially with the Department of Agricultural Engineering over a long period of time, Mr. G.W. Giles. Wallace, would you begin this interview by telling us where you were born, where you went to school in the early days, what led you into the field of agriculture, and got you pointed in the direction that you ultimately went?
Okay, I was born in Nebraska City, Nebraska, and went to high school in Nebraska City. From there, I went to the University of Nebraska at Lincoln, and it was about 1718 was my first year at the University of Nebraska. I enrolled in agriculture, not knowing what I wanted to take, and went along for 2 years. But I became associated with close to a Professor Smith, who was a professor of agricultural engineering. And one of the courses he taught was farm motors, and I took it, and after I had finished, he offered me a job on an hour basis to help him out in the future laboratories. He then became my advisor, and as a result of this, I changed from agriculture to agricultural engineering.
Let's back up for just a moment. Did you grow up on a farm?
Yes, I did. I owned a farm about 9 miles out of Nebraska City.
I suppose when you graduated from high school, state of Nebraska, there wasn't much question about where you would go to college. Is that right?
Well, there wasn't. No, that's right. There was only one place to go as far as I was concerned, as far as my parents was concerned, and that was the University of Nebraska. That was only about 50 miles away.
So you enrolled in the University of Nebraska, and then because of the course and the association with the fellow who was your advisor, you got into agricultural engineering, and when did you graduate?
I graduated in 33, and prior to graduation, I was lucky enough to apply for and get a scholarship, was really assistantship, to the University of Missouri to pursue work towards a Master of Science degree in agricultural engineering. As I remember, at that time it was only about the only assistantship offered in the Middle West. And the funny thing, it was for $25 a month. When I arrived there, first check come $22.50. The state of Missouri, this is during the Depression, the state of Missouri had instituted a 10% across the board cut.
So you got 10% less than you contracted for at $25 a month. Well, you worked your master's degree in agricultural engineering at the University of Missouri?
Yes, I did. I got it in the spring of 1935, and became a research associate there at the University of Missouri, and then I was offered a job at North Carolina State College at that time. To be effective January the 1st, 1936.
Okay, now how did you apply at North Carolina State, or did they find you, or what was your contact?
So I think Professor Weaver, who was head of the department at that time, D.S. Weaver, had written J.C. Woolley who was head of the department at University of Missouri, asked him for some recommendations. And Professor Woolley had recommended me, and I received a letter from Professor Weaver, which resulted in my employment.
Did you Professor, know?
Go ahead. I was going to say Professor Weaver had been hired for, had been given a 1 year leave of absence from North Carolina State College to work with the Rural Electrification Authority in Washington, D.C., Department of Agriculture. Professor Weaver had been instrumental in forwarding a very aggressive program in rural electrification in North Carolina, and as a result of that, he was offered this job to help them get organized nationally for a rural education program. So he was a sole teacher at North Carolina State College. So he
in agricultural engineering.
In agricultural engineering.
Right.
And he was looking for somebody to take his place while he was on this leave. And so I was hired for this on a 1 year basis. It was for 1 year only.
And that was in what year?
That was beginning January 1936.
1936. Did you know either Dr. Fulton Lutz or Dr. Roy Lovern at the University of Missouri?
Yes, I knew both of them. Matter of fact, they were fraternity brothers. We were associated there. Fulton Lutz was head of the fraternity society at that time, and Dr. Lovern was in there part time. He was in and out. He had a job out in the state in extension work.
Either extension or soil conservation.
It might have been soil conservation. I wasn't too familiar with it.
Was Dr. Baver there at that time?
Yes, Dr. Baver was in soils, and as a matter of fact, I took a course under him in soil physics.
But Mr. Weaver's letter, rather than your acquaintance with any of these people, that caused you to come to North Carolina initially.
Correct. That is correct.
In my interview with Dr. Baver.
Well, let me say that they really had no higher position at the University of Missouri that was open. They had this assistantship. And to come here at North Carolina as assistant professor was an advancement.
Yes. Well, Dr. Baver was very attempted to tell me, and because of his difficulty in getting words, said that he was very proud that you were one of the people that he brought to North Carolina State. But then he later wanted to correct what he had said about that. I'm putting this here so it can be checked with the transcript in Dr. Baver's statement.
Okay.
He attempted to correct it, but had difficulty in getting it out. And what I interpreted him as saying in that correction was that he kept you from leaving here one time when you'd been offered a job somewhere. He was proud to have kept you here, is what I think he was saying. Does that check with you? Were you offered a job at somewhere at one time while Dr. Baver was here?
Dean, I don't remember. I've had letters of inquiry to see whether I was interested in the position in other places, but as I remember, I turned them all down. I like North Carolina. We both, Ms. Giles and I both liked it.
Well,
I had no reason for wanting to leave.
Well, Dr. Baver, in his own mind at least, felt that you, and I'm sure this was true, that you were an important person in the early development of the institution at about the time he came here. And he mentioned Walter Peterson and some of the people that he was responsible for bringing here. He mentioned his assistance to me in getting my advanced work. And he mentioned your name, and I just wanted to clear that up But I think what he was saying was that he helped to prevent you from taking one of those jobs.
Well, I would say that was true because, you see, he came here, as I remember, he came here as an assistant director of research. He came here as head of
agronomy.
Department of Agronomy, and then became assistant director of research under Salter.
Yes.
Salter.
Yes.
Who stayed a very short time, yes. And then Baver moved up to director.
Right.
And,
well, that clarifies that point.
No, I'll tell you what he was, I think, responsible for. I'm talking about Baver. More than any one person, that is getting some research funds into the Department of Ag Engineering for agricultural engineering research.
Now, it could be that that's what he was saying, because
one of the first things he said to me when he became assistant was that we ought to be getting some research in ag engineering. So he had a lot to do with it. I'm sure he wasn't the only one. But
he was talking about the people who helped to move things along that he had some particular relationship with, and I wanted to clarify that. But I think that does it. Now, you were here. You came here then for a one-year commitment while Dave Weaver was away.
Yes.
What happened at the end of that year?
Well, at the end of the year, they found money to keep me on as a teacher, a full-time teacher. Of course, we were paid for 9 months of work, but the salary was spread over 12 months,
yes.
A matter of convenience. So I was really this following Weaver. Then Weaver came back and was associated both with extension and with teaching, and he was on a part-time deal. He taught part-time, he was extension part-time. I was full-time teaching.
And you and Weaver were the department?
As it was known then, I must say that, to make the record clear, that extension, ag engineering extension, was not in the department.
Right.
The extension people reported to the director of extension.
Right. But you were the, but there was a person,
yes.
At least one person in extension.
More than one.
More than one.
Extension was the strongest part of ag engineering,
okay.
at North Carolina State College at that time.
Okay, now how about taking us through the development of the Department of Agricultural Engineering for the next several years? Of course, I know that eventually you became chairman of the department, but how about giving us a little look? Now, there will be a history available of the department. What I'm particularly interested in here is in getting your views of how some things took place and what caused them to happen.
Well, one of the first things that Professor Weaver and I talked about was getting a curriculum in agricultural engineering. Now, B.S. Weaver had been working on this, but it didn't come to pass, as I remember, until a few years later, after my arrival. But prior to having a curriculum in ag engineering, we were offering only service courses to those students registered in other departments who were working primarily towards a degree in agriculture. There were a few specialties. I don't recall the exact date that we started a work towards, offering work towards a B.S. degree in agriculture. but it would be in the history that I wrote.
Yes.
The date of it.
Yes.
Okay, that was one of the primary objectives. Now, another primary objective was to get some research going. So we recognized that research was important to a vital and growing department. And I mentioned previously that Baylor was very instrumental in getting some. It might be interesting to note the first research project, there's a list of these seed harvest worked on. It never came into being and never really amounted to a whole lot. But as I recall, some money was allocated for that by Director Winters, who was Director of Research at the time, and he allocated it to me out of some funds that he had under his control. As I remember, just $100 or $200. But the first real project, and this is very interesting, it was in cooperation with the Department of Agronomy and soils in agronomy at that time, but with Emerson Collins. He and I worked together on a one-row machine that would put down, among other things, cotton seed with fertilizer placed to the side. Previous research had indicated that fertilizer placed in a band to the side and below the seed would be most efficiently used by the plant. So he and I worked on that, and I developed one. This was during Dean Schaub's period, and we were arranged for John Blue Company.
John Blue Company.
At Laurinburg, North Carolina, to make some prototypes, which we did. But at that period, tractors, I want to make it clear that machine was one row and was designed to be pulled by a pair of, or one mule, depending on what farm wanted to use. But at that time, farmers were interested in tractors. And tractors were beginning to come in. And farmers were simply not interested in any animal-drawn tool, whatever.
That was the turning point.
Yeah, it was the turning point. But there was one thing that came out of that was very good for the state of North Carolina, and that was a recognition of the fact that you could get increased yields by precision farming, by precisely placing the seed, and in this case, the fertilizer. And it would happen whether it was a mule-drawn machine or whether it was a tractor-operated machine. The principles were there. Well, let's see here. There was the beginning of our research facilities.
Where were your offices at
our
that?
Our offices, when I first came in, were in Williams Hall, and along with the agronomy was in there, field crops and soils. The pathology was in there. They were on the second floor, as I remember. And Professor Weaver and I occupied one office down at the east end of the building.
Is that Williams or Patterson?
Williams.
Williams.
Did I say Patterson?
No, you said Williams, but I thought Williams came into being later than that.
Let's see, now wait a minute. I'm wrong. It is Patterson. Patterson Hall was the main agriculture building.
That's where the dean's office is.
That's where the dean's office is now.
And that's where you were.
That's where we were.
Right.
And Rick's Hall next to it was the extension.
Right.
Yeah. I was involved in Patterson.
Yeah.
And No, I'm sorry, Williams. I was never involved in Williams Hall. Williams Hall is a new
yes.
building, but right.
So you were in Patterson?
We were in Patterson Hall. And our laboratory was in the basement of Patterson Hall. At the west end, we occupied, I would say, roughly a third of that basement. And
well, you you went along then for several years developing various projects in research as you could obtain support for it, and with Professor Weaver remaining the chairman of the department for a while. And eventually you became the chairman. When did this take place?
This took place during Weaver's tenure as a dean of agriculture. And it was not, it was a little bit ahead of the time that he left. Okay. Well, it was 1948 that I became
48,
that
had to be about right.
As I remembered, Dean Weaver left maybe a year or so later.
You became head of agricultural engineering at almost the same time I became head of animal industry.
I think that's right.
That was in 48.
I believe that's right. And D.S. Weaver became director of extension.
He became director of extension following the departure, the retirement of Dean Schaub.
Yes, I think he followed Dean Schaub. That's right.
Uh-huh.
Or he left the department, so they had to look for another department head.
Yes.
Department of Ag Engineering head.
Yes.
Okay.
Now you, then you started, the department started building up. You started bringing in some young teachers and research workers at a pretty rapid pace there for a while, didn't you?
For a while, but D.S. Weaver brought in a few. As I remember, one of the men that he brought in was N.C. Teeter, who was the first full-time researcher. And one of the interesting things that he was working on was the utilization of farm waste for various things such as insulation of homes and buildings, etc. We also brought in a young man Ralph Green, who was a native North Carolinian, but was head of a research shop in the Department of Agricultural Engineering at Purdue University. I should say that we, maybe this is not the place you want me to inject this, but we were moved around the campus from one building to another many times. One period, we did not have very much space in the bottom of Patterson Hall or anything. This included farm shop, which we were teaching then to, among other students, students in vocational agriculture. And agriculture education, vocational agriculture in the Department of Education was very interested in these students getting a better training in shop. So Dean Brown, who was dean of the School of Education.
School of Education, right.
At that time?
Right.
Okay. Well, he...
T.B. Brown.
T.E. Brown.
T.E. or T.B.
Something like that. Tom Brown.
Tom Brown, right.
Okay, he had a lot to do with getting a modern farm shop built into the basement of, let's see, what was the name of the building that they occupied?
Well, it's the building there between the tower and 1911 building.
It was right east. You see, it faced Hillsborough Street. It was long Hillsborough Street.
Long Hillsborough Street.
And it was the next building the chemistry building.
Yes, I know what it was, and I can look in the record.
Tompkins Hall.
Tompkins Hall, right.
Tompkins Hall.
Right.
Okay, in the basement of Tompkins Hall, half of that basement, and it was a good-sized building, was devoted to a farm shop, and with the help of J.C. Coggins.
Coggins, right.
J.K. Coggins, who was a teacher in vocational agriculture. He and I together put together one of the most modern shops for that purpose in the United States. Well, that was one of the moves. Another move came when they moved the rest of the Ag Engineering Laboratory, not the office, but the laboratory, into the judging pavilion, which was west, back of, attached to Polk Hall. And we used the concrete bleacher seats in that judging pavilion for the students to sit on.
That was an area that was later developed into a meat laboratory.
Was it?
Yes.
I thought it was dairy. I didn't
well,
know.
Well, I think the dairy or meat, they were both down there.
Okay. Now, from there, and let's see, my mind's a little fuzzy. We have to look into history. But from there, we moved. We moved over along Western Boulevard to a wooden building that was vacated, having been used for a national youth program following it was before World War II. It was the aftermath of the Depression.
Yes.
National Youth Administration.
NYA.
NYA. Its headquarters. Or that program it was dismantled, I guess. But anyway, they gave us the old building. And it was heated by two pot-bellied stoves, as I remember, coal-fed. And
you had your offices and laboratory?
Our offices in there, and in the wintertime, we would work with our coats on during cold weather in our offices. Now, it was when we were in that shop, when we were in that building, we had a shop in there, that Ralph Green came into the picture, as I recall. Now, from there, we moved Mr. Morris, who was in charge of maintenance for the college, built us a building just west and south of the judging pavilion, a Polk Hall, right across the street. The Bureau, U.S. Bureau of Mines stands in its place now. I think it's still there. I think it's still the U.S. Bureau of Mines.
Well, I'm not sure of that.
But it's a brick building, and what he built for us was a wooden structure. We had some offices in the center, and they were concreted, but the rest of the laboratories surrounding that were dirt. We, as I remember, we concreted it ourselves on a do-it-as-is self basis. We had a little money while we laid a little concrete. All right. Now, Ralph Green might have come in at that point rather than the NYA building. But I do remember that Ralph Green helped us move from that wooden structure to a new building, which was a wing to to Mangum Hall, which is now known as Clark Hall, I believe.
Mangum Hall was the building.
But this building was back of the textile building.
Right.
And the front part of this building was occupied by government agriculture agency.
The AAA,
agriculture stabilization and that sort of thing.
Yes.
Well, the college built a wing extending westward from that, three stories high. And so we moved into that. The plan was that eventually we'd get the front part, but that never came into being. I better complete the space problem.
Yes, do that.
While we're on it. It was while we were in that wing, which we, incidentally, we dedicated that wing of the building in the memory of Mangum, who developed Bill and built the first Mangum Terrace in the United States.
That's M-A-N-G-U-M.
M-A-N-G-U-M. And I forgot his initials.
Mangum Terrace, T-E-R-R-A-C-E.
Correct. I have a picture. It was up here near Wake Forest. And we had a historical marker put in at that place, and there's a picture in the history that I wrote of the department.
That'll be
cleared up.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Now, we were pretty much hemmed in there. We never were able to have the use of the front part of the building. All we had was those three large floors, the back, and the road came right up close to it. We were told that we couldn't expand to Ward's textile building because that was reserved for them. So we began to look for other areas. We really, the first appropriation that we got, we put the money into a building at the corner of Western Boulevard and Dan Allen Drive.
That happened after I got into the picture as...
Weren't you still there when we...
Yes, I was, well, dean. I was dean while that was...
It was started when Hilton was dean. And you succeeded Hilton, did you not?
Right.
Okay. It was started when Hilton was there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember I kept Hilton informed of what I was doing in the way of trying to get a building. And he would give me a few suggestions now and then.
I think it's an interesting point right there that you say what you were doing to try to get the building. That means that you were talking with people who might influence appropriations.
Yes, for example, the Farm Bureau.
Yes.
What we were trying to do is tell them what agricultural engineering could do for the state of North Carolina. A lot of people didn't know what agricultural engineering was in those days. And people in the state were beginning to get interested in mechanization as a result of labor deficiencies.
Come in.
Okay, you were
talking about your new building.
Yeah, the first appropriation. And then I believe it was built, if I'm not right, during your regime.
That's right, it was.
It was built.
Right.
And we although we had money for just a small part of it, we did spend money in having the total building concept. The perspective of the whole building planned, so that if we ever got any additional appropriations, we'd know where it would go. Incidentally, that left the department kind of widely dispersed, some of the department was in the new building on Western Boulevard and then Elm Drive. Some was still in Mangum Hall. Some was still in Ricks Hall. The extension people were in Ricks Hall.
Yeah.
Well, subsequently, they got, we got additional appropriations. We got it on one additional appropriation, and I was still head. And then they got additional appropriation after I left, and Dr. Hassler took over. And so the department is now all located in that building, Dan Allen and Western Boulevard, including the extension. Maybe I should mention at this point, so it's clear that the extension specialists in ag engineering are now a part of the department.
Yes.
And that came about officially after I left January 1, 1961.
They technically the administration was merged, I guess, when Baver left. Baver was dean and director. He was not director. He did not have extension under his jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
And when Hilton came in as dean, this was the first time that all three groups had been administratively under the same coordinated, but they were not moved physically until later, and you indicated that that was about 1961.
Officially they became under the head of the Department of Ag Engineering after I left.
And that was during Dr. Brooks James' administration as dean.
That is correct.
Because I left in 1960.
Okay.
And
that is correct. As a matter of fact, that is right.
Yes. Well, now, Wallace, I know that the activities in agricultural engineering picked up a great deal about the time this new building was coming into being. And if I recall correctly, you were getting involved more deeply in back curing research. You were getting involved, and you talked a good bit about such things as human engineering, and maybe that's not the right word, but you were measuring forces of different kinds. Tell us just in a few words about what led you into these areas. Did you I know you yourself gave the leadership to it. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, I help, but Let me get a little more fundamental than what you're talking about.
All right.
I came out, even at the University of Nebraska, I was in the School of Engineering. Agricultural engineering was in engineering. But still, in the Department of Ag Engineering, we were involved in a lot of vocational type of work. For example, in farm motors, I learned how to pour Babbitt bearings in the Model T Ford and scrape them and run them in. Now that's fine, that's a lot of skills, but there's something more. That's not good, sound, fundamental engineering. I'm not criticizing that, it's just a period in our growth. And I recognize that here in North Carolina, that if we were going to be a growing discipline, growing profession that would provide some real benefit service to North Carolinians, that we were going to have to get out in part of this vocational attitude. Now, There are two things. One is I talk with a lot of people here and elsewhere, but out of all this, I sense that what ag engineering needed was what agriculture in Maine students needed in the way of education was a good foundation in sciences. Two kinds. One, the physical sciences, which is the basis of engineering, and the other, the biological science, which is the basis of agriculture. So we began to develop a curriculum that would give this kind of training to those students who wanted it. Now, we didn't turn our backs on applied technology. We continued to offer that and still do today. It's still strong today for those who want it. But there are a lot of students who want this science and mathematics background so they can go further and deeper into their discipline. They can go through the PhD with this. And the other thing that, and well, let me keep on there. So to get this thing started, a part of it was we had to begin to offer a master science degree and a PhD degree. One of the things that I did was get permission to go around the country and visit the various departments on a recruiting mission, really, and trying to search out the best young men in the country with that kind of a training. And incidentally, one of the men I picked out was Dr. Hassler at Michigan. He had, on his own, developed that kind of a program. If you'd look at his course of study, you'd wonder, well, what department is he in? Because he had a lot of biological sciences on there, and he had a lot of mathematics. Gee, he went deep in mathematics. So a number of other people, Henry Bowen, Bill Splinter, who's now head of the Department of Nebraska, was the one that I hired. Now, mind you, we didn't diminish the technological approach to our training. The other thing that is significant, and Dean, you had a lot to do with it. You remember when you was appointed on a committee that was co-chairman by Brennecke, who was head of electrical engineering, and myself to look into and consider the possibilities of joint
administration
of agricultural engineering by the School of Engineering and the School of Agriculture.
I remember that committee very well.
And out of that came a recommendation that we do this. And you'll be interested in knowing that has worked out very successfully.
That's great.
We have, in engineering, I'm talking about the faculty, have gained a lot by being more closely associated with some of the engineers over there. As a matter of fact, one of the department's men, Irving Humphrey, is a joint employee of the School of Engineering and School of Agriculture.
That's at the present time.
At the present time, right now.
That's Humphrey.
Humphrey.
Humphrey. H-U-M-P-H-R-E-Y.
He pronounces it Humphrey.
H-U-M-P-H-R-E-Y.
But the H is silent.
Yeah, but I'm calling the dictating machine now for the transcriber.
H-U-M-P-H-R-Y. I think that's right. Irvin.
E-R-V-I-N. Irvin, okay.
Irvin Humphrey.
It's a little hard for the transcriber
right.
to get this out.
Right.
Well, that was a very significant development. I know it was dedicated to the purposes that you were just saying have actually been fulfilled. But I had not had the chance to know before how well it worked out.
It had, and it has worked out to the benefit of agriculture. I'm saying that these men who have this kind of training which I described are more productive in the field of agriculture in solving the problems with agriculture as a result of this.
Well, let's back up just a moment and see one or two of the specific things that came out of that joint effort. If I remember correctly, one of the provisions in that recommendation was that you, as chairman of the department, would have an opportunity of sitting in on department chairman meetings in both schools.
This is correct.
Mm-hmm. And this automatically gave you insights and contacts and an opportunity to build the relationships and
yes.
the confidences.
Yes, and it must be recorded. It was recognized that the agriculture engineers were not looked upon and real engineers.
Yes.
It was widely known on the campus. I mean, before this took place.
Well, I think that what this means in terms of institution building is that there was a clear commitment on your part as a leader of agricultural engineers who may not have been regarded by engineers in the past as having been as sophisticated as they were. There was a recognition on your part of a need for association with the fundamentals, but there was also a generosity on their part in permitting you to come in or inviting you to come in and sharing that responsibility and saying that they wanted to have a joint arrangement. Dean, as I remember, Dr. Brennecke and Dean Lampe were quite cooperative in that.
Oh, yes. Dean Lampe was very enthusiastic about it.
That's Dean Harold Lampe, L-A-M-P-E.
Right.
And Brennecke is B-R-E-N-N-E-K-E.
I think that's right. He was head of the Department of Electrical Engineering.
Electrical and was chairman, co-chairman with you
uh-huh.
of this committee.
Right.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Then you moved on into, you had that new arrangement and you had a new building now and you had recruited some top people and I think that's a significant thing that, first of all, that you were supported and permitted to go around the country and look for these people and that the bills were paid and secondly that you found the top people and brought them here. About what year would that have been?
Well, I would say about 1950. I became head in 1948.
That was done while Hilton was dean, wasn't it?
It was done while Hilton was dean, yes, it was.
Well, he left here in 1953, so it was done between...
So it probably was a little later in 50.
It was in the early 50s.
But it was in the early 50s, yes, okay. I'm sure of that.
I think the important thing is that it was in the early 50s that you were chairman and that it was while Hilton was dean.
Yes, this is correct.
And I would suspect that you might have used some Agricultural Foundation funds for those travels.
I don't know. I don't know how it was paid.
But some of those things, I was thinking particularly Brooks James, opportunity to study around the country, that was paid by the Agricultural Foundation, I know.
Well, I don't think this was.
This may not have been. Okay.
It wasn't.
But at any rate, it was supported by the administration.
It wasn't as an expensive of trip. There were only a few institutions that were in the upper class as far as ag engineering goes that I went to.
Well, you moved on into all of these research programs and the history of the department will show this pretty well, the annual reports and things of this kind, but how would you rank the Department of Agricultural Engineering at NC State University today among departments in the country?
Well, of course we must recognize that I am biased, but I would rank North Carolina State as number one. I'm sincere in this. And I think there's evidence that it's considered one of the dominant departments in the United States by the number of students that come here from out of state to get their PhD. So,
and you had no trouble after you got this image abroad in recruiting top-notch faculty?
No, this is one thing. Once you get in place a good faculty, then you immediately attract good students right here in your own group on the campus, and then when it comes to the graduate program from other places. For example, I know that Snell, who was head of department down in South Carolina, Clemson, came up here and got his PhD here.
Well, didn't the head of the Department of Agricultural Engineering at Mississippi State while I was there?
Jim Anderson, he was a student, yes. Jim Anderson, didn't he become dean in Mississippi?
He is dean.
And now he's
in Michigan.
In Michigan.
Yes.
Yes, I saw him.
Michigan State.
I saw him this summer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was a student of
Vegas. He was a student over here. He got, yes. I believe he got his PhD here.
I think he did. I think he did. And he worked at Clemson a while.
Yes, he from here he went to Clemson.
Yes.
Correct.
Well, Wallace, you've been either involved or been a close observer of the School of Agriculture, as has been indicated by the record here from the days before Baver and Salter came in the late 30s through the present time. You've been living close by and working with them. It's obvious, I think, from what you've said and from what many others have said in these interviews, that there's been a very unusual development of vitality and leadership in this institution. Since you and I are both been out of it for some time and both still take pride in how much it's improved since we left.
Oh, my. more improvement since I left.
we can speak at least with some freedom from at least part of our biases, but the question I wanted to get at is, can you identify one or two of the reasons why you think the school as a whole has moved forward in the national prestige and in academic quality and public service as it has? What caused all this to happen?
Well, I would say that to me, the turning point came for North Carolina State College came when they brought in Salter and Baver.
Do you know who?
To me, they were the foundation for building a new and greater, now known as a university.
Well, why do you think they happened to come here? Who brought them?
I do not know, Dean, but the leadership in the state, and I can't identify who it is, wanted a stronger program in agriculture, and particularly in research, as I recall. And how they prevailed on
Well, I have some record on that.
I do not know.
I think one of the principal actors in this whole thing was Dr. Frank Graham.
I remember now. He was a real outstanding individual. I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
Well, we've established that pretty clearly. That as an individual, I keep fishing for others, and that's why I was putting the question to you. Now, it should be clear that Dr. Graham couldn't have done this had he not had had the support of the Farm Bureau and the Grange and other farm leadership been forthcoming.
I'm sure that's right. But
actually, most of the leadership for appropriations came not from Dr. Graham, but from these other forces. Mm-hmm. And that started pretty much with Baber, because the first appropriation, the first state appropriation for research for agriculture was during Dr. Baber's administration.
The first state appropriation.
All the research that was available, so far as I can determine, for agriculture prior to Baber's coming was made available through the Department of Agriculture by income from feed and fertilizer inspection taxes and from the federal government.
Are you saying that the money that Dr. Winters had for research was all federal?
Federal and Department of Agriculture.
Oh, downtown.
I don't think Dr. Winters ever had a state appropriation. That's the way it looks.
I would think that would be in Schaub's.
Yeah, that record can be established. I ask some people. I ask Roy Lovering, who was here before Baber and Sullivan, question as to why.
Yes, he came in.
As to why, I said, well, it was a lot of people equate the turning point with the coming of Baber and Salter. And yet, prior to the time they came, people like Wallace Giles and Paul Harvey and Roy Lovering.
Roy Lovering, so he followed me just a few months.
Were brought in. And so I said to Roy, who brought you folks in? Certainly Salter and Baber didn't. And Roy said, it's very simple. He said, there's some new federal funds came along. And Paul Harvey was sent here on federal funds initially.
And well, I know that when Paul Harvey came here, he was regarded as the best man in the United States in the breeding of new varieties of corn.
And he was on federal, he was a federal
man. I don't know where his funds came from.
Yeah.
But he was a highly regarded man.
Well, I've interviewed Paul, incidentally, and so we won't get to waste a lot of time with this. Well, Wallace, are there other, I know there are many, many projects that we could go into, but those are in the records. Are there observations that you'd like to make about the character of the Institute, of the growth of NC State School of Agriculture? Any generalizations or observations that you'd like to make, I think we'd certainly like to have here.
You're talking about the School of Agriculture.
I'm talking about the school and the forces that have caused the progress has been pretty steadily in one direction without much reversion.
This is correct.
Dean McGates tells me that most of the rankings now, based on numbers of PhDs turned out and numbers of master's degrees turned out and a whole series of rankings, most of them would show the NC State School of Agriculture now as a whole, certainly in the top half dozen in the country. And it would not have been ranked high at all when you and I first came here.
Yeah, but this is correct. The people generally throughout the country that I came in contact with by going to annual meetings and this sort of thing had not a very good outlook or very good opinion of North Carolina State College, of course North Carolina State University now, except that one thing. And this is one of the reasons I came here. One of my advisors at the University of Missouri, working on my master's degree, was a Professor Jones, Professor Mac Jones. And when I got the letter from DSW, where I took it in to him to talk it over with him, and he said, I would advise you to take it on one, because of one thing. He said, they have consolidated unified the university system in North Carolina. I'm saying that they have taken the Chapel Hill unit and the Greensboro unit and the Raleigh unit and put them all under one head. Now, he said, that makes sense to me. He says, I believe they're progressive. And he says, I think that would be a good place for a young man to become attached to.
Well, I hope you never regretted coming.
No, goodness, no. If I had, I'd have drawn a left.
Well, one other, let me ask you another question now. And this is based partly on an observation that I've made, but one which is obvious enough, I think, for anybody to see. For some reason, or some combination of reasons, a great deal of leadership, not only within the state, but within the nation, and even within the world, has grown out of has emanated from the faculty of the School of Agriculture at NC State, more than from any other school at NC State, and perhaps more than from most schools anywhere in the country. I'm referring to such things as having produced a national coordinator of the extension research service, Dr. Lovern, a national director of extension, E.T. York, any number of deans and directors in several of the states. We can name a whole string of them. We've produced a number of university presidents, and Hilton, Jensen, and Bishop, and Ratchford, and yes. Robinson, and so you go on. A great deal of leadership has emerged from an institution that previously had made no major impact on the nation. Why has that happened?
Well, I think